the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, Turkey Day edition on the CBP Media Network, Gobble Gobble, where we have a higher approval rating than Liz Truss's 11%. My name is Joey. I'm here with my co-host, Len. I just heard that today. Yeah, I'm here with my co-host, Len. And, well, first of all, buddy, happy Thanksgiving. Great to see you.
Yeah,
you and me both, are we both about 10 pounds heavier now than we were at this time last week? I got to be close. I bet you I'm pushing 185, 186 right now, if I had to guess.
Since Friday Friday afternoon, yeah, because I had two separate Thanksgiving get-togethers, and each of them were heavy in the eating. A lot of fun, a lot of gathering with family, and, you know, it was good. But now it comes to push towards Christmas. Let's get rid of what we just gained and go from there. But 11%, I had no idea that it was that low. She's just recently been nominated, appointed. I'm not sure.
She was just appointed. Actually, I actually took a poll, or Pew Research, I should say. So it was an impartial third party. Took a poll of all my jilted ex-girlfriends, and I came in at about 18% approval, which is unbelievable. Just gives you an idea of how much the UK citizens like their new prime minister. Interesting stuff.
Give her a chance. She's only been at the job for what, 3 weeks or something like that, maybe longer, but really give her a chance before you really nail her to the cross. Give her a chance to screw things up. I don't think she has, but I'm not really following it that closely. But, and this is not the British Bitcoiners show, this is the Canadian Bitcoiners show.
True.
We should be talking about stuff.
Yeah, we'll get to it. Happy Thanksgiving to you guys in the chat. Good to see everybody. Can't believe people are making time to come watch this when they should be like devouring turkey or recovering from devouring turkey. We have two great sponsors for the show, Len. The first is ShakePay, the best place for Canadians to buy and never sell their Bitcoin. Lots of stuff going on. If you can make it through the whole 10 minutes it takes to sign up, use our promo code CBP. You get 10 bucks on your first $100. Not bad. But on top of that, shake your phone every day. 1,000 sats after a year. Can't beat that. Every single day, 1,000 sats. I just crossed 500 days today. I'm happy to report. Waiting for ShakePay to send me a care package with a Letterman jacket and whatever else Carlo and the boys and girls over there got cooking up. They also got ShakePay. Spend off your cab balance. They might Compati and Satoshis. You can't beat it, man. Another way to add to your stack. It's fantastic. Then they got the ShakePay Earn program, which is in the queue stage right now. You're going to be stashing Canadian dollars, getting Bitcoin back in interest. Amazing stuff. And then they also have the Shake Squads, you and four friends, four people you met on the street. Maybe a guy was under the underpass bridge last time you walked your dog. You guys can all buy something on your CAD balance. Every time you buy, someone gets 42 Satoshis. And the rest of your team gets it too. It's amazing. So I've seen, I saw the other day that, I hate when I say I've seen. I don't think I've said that in 10 years. I saw the other day on ShakePay's Twitter feed that one of these teams is like closing in on 22 or 23,000 sats earned via the Shake Squads program. Is that nuts or what? Like how many, what are those people buying?
Who the hell knows? Maybe Bitcoin. That'd be so ironic if that's the case, if they were buying Bitcoin elsewhere and then getting that comp. That'd be awesome. But one thing I just want to add, a great way to never forget how to shake or to shake your phone is leave a balance of Canadian dollars on your ShakePay account. And if you are registered or part of the Shake Earn program, you're going to get a notice every day that you have balance on there, and you're going to get points. And when you notice, oh crap, I got some points, I got to remember to shake my phone. So that's one way. If you want to just set an alarm, you don't even have to, just leave a few bucks on there. I think greater than 10 on the ShakePay app, and boom, yeah, you get a notification daily that you've earned some points. And that's going to be a way to remind yourself to shake your phone.
I have been keeping money on my ShakePay account more than I usually do. Most of the time I transfer in like on payday to cover the DCA for the next 2 weeks, but I don't really keep a balance on top of that. But I find myself keeping a little bit more because I want to move up that queue. Maybe that'll stick when the earn thing comes out. It might. Anyway, we got another sponsor. Who are they? They've been going through some stuff. They got some stuff to say, right?
Yeah, we'll be talking about them at length later on, but it's Ledin. And it's a great place to start earning interest on your BTC or USDC. And if you open up an account with our referral code below, fund your Ledin account with 10 USDC or 150,000 sats. Oh, sorry, 75 USDC or 150,000 sats. Keep it on your platform for 15 consecutive days. Don't take it off. Leave it on there for 15 consecutive days. They'll reward you with 10 USDC. Another thing they do have is if you have some bills, you have a large stack of Bitcoin, who doesn't these days, given the price, how low it is, don't sell your Bitcoin if you have bills to pay. Just borrow against it. And Ledin is there to help you out. Use your Bitcoin as collateral. Put it on your platform, 50% loan to value. They give you the money and you're good to go. You can go ahead and pay those large bills that are outstanding. Also, if you are bullish, you think the price is going up, use B2X, where you could simply double up your Bitcoin stack. You're borrowing against your Bitcoin and buying Bitcoin as a result. That's what the B2X does. And pull out once the price of Bitcoin goes up. Because if you do this correctly, you time the market right, go in when it's low, pull in when it's high, while you have some more Bitcoin simply by using the B2X feature. The last thing they have is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. An industry first, great place to get a mortgage using Bitcoin, but not available in every jurisdiction. So make sure you check their website where they're offering that. But when you're on their website, check to see what are the rates for the savings and borrowing accounts, because those change on a month-to-month basis. And there's going to be more that's going to be added to my list. We'll be talking about that later.
Looking forward to it. We got a lot to talk about tonight. The price of Bitcoin, first, Len. My phone's updating right now, and my block clock is on the block. I think it's like 19,150 or so. What do you got in Canadian dollars?
So in Canadian, I got 26,390. Are we in the same place where we were last week? I can't remember.
It's around the same spot. That 20K number, we've been chopping there for a while. And you know what happens when we stay in the same place for a while, Len? We get a move. We get some volatility. So let's see. Next couple of days, next week, inflation print Thursday. I'm sure we'll talk about that. That price, but it's been moving.
June. That's a heck of a long time to be in this 5K region, 18 to 24, 23, whatever heck you want to call it. In that, it's a very, very like stuck position. Doesn't want to go above or beyond that since June. Something's got to give. Which way? I don't know.
Come back next week to find out.
You want to just get at it, Joey?
Let's go, man. I'm ready.
All right. Let's talk about the U.S. side of things. There's some really interesting things going on there. And we'll examine why we Bitcoin as we focus on what's burning in the financial world. And leading things off, we could talk about, well, it's official now. The U.S. gross national debt has finally crossed $31 trillion. We've been talking about this for some time, but it's now official. $31 trillion is now. It's a reality, the highest number ever in existence with respect to debt. And keep in mind, put things in perspective, it was $20 trillion just a mere 10 years ago. So they added 50% to this debt in only 10 years. And to keep things moving, I want to just focus on four things: jobs, equities markets, energy, and housing. And with respect to the jobs, the U.S. job numbers that came in for September, President Joe Biden was tweeting away how the economy created 263,000 jobs last month. And he's saying that's 10 million jobs since he came into the office, the fastest growing at any point for any president of American history. So yeah, okay, I'm good with that. Based on the charts I see, he is correct. But really, the unemployment number sits now at 3.5%. And this is the same number that was back in January 2020. That was when shit hit the fan. So we're not really seeing much growth, in my honest opinion, still. It is a stat that is trending in the right direction, but really, I wonder how many of this is people getting second jobs or retired individuals coming back and trying to get back in the workforce to try to make ends meet. So there's a lot to it to see that just isn't a lot to celebrate. But one thing that is indeed concerning is that the average hourly earnings increased year over year 4.98%. We'll call it 5%. That's as of year over year as of September. This is a far cry from the CPI, which came in a little over 8%. If you believe the CPI numbers to be true, then the nearly 5% increase in hourly wages, and if you couple this with buying treasuries or bonds, well, you might be just about treading water on a yearly basis. I'm not saying this is the best course of action and the best strategy. What I'm just saying that this is potentially one option that's available to people. Of course, this is totally not financial advice. And this is a good segue to moving on to the equities and bonds market. And the 60-40 split, it's dead. So this is down. If you look at that, it's down 21% in the year 2022, which seems bad, but even worse when you're considering it's on pace to be the second worst year in history after 1931. 1931 was a stellar year with respect to bonds and equities. And if you look at the S&P 500 and the 10-year treasury bond, so combining these two both, only five times have both these numbers been negative in a given year. 1931, 1941, 69, 2018, and 2022. And both the S&P 500 and 10-year treasury bond are down more than 10% in 2022. This has never happened before, going back all to the 1920s. 100 years worth of data, never happened before. And if you do think the markets are going to continue to tank, and there may be a chance for that to happen, it's a good chance that also Bitcoin's price is going to go down as well. Since if you look at it, the price of Bitcoin seems to be very tied right now to the traditional markets. And if you overlay the price of Bitcoin with the NASDAQ or even the S&P 500, you'll see that they march in lockstep. When one goes up, the other one tends to go up. And ditto, if one goes down, the other one goes down as well. So keep that in mind if you think the price of Bitcoin is going to rip and if you think the price of the stock markets are going to tank. Well, you know what? They're probably not going to go in a different direction. They're probably going to go in the same direction. But one thing that isn't going to be down, going to be going down, is the price of energy. And we have a lot to thank for the deteriorating relationship between the U.S. and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And gone are the days of Saudi Arabia picking up the phone when the U.S. president calls them. Nowadays, when the call is made, it just goes right to fucking voicemail. So what has happened in the past week? Well, OPEC Plus nations, they came out and decided to scale back on their crude output. And this came at the heels of the U.S. putting pressure on them for not cutting output, arguing that economic fundamentals do not support an output. And this is all as per Reuters. So the U.S. was begging for them to cut it. Didn't happen. And goodbye to 2 million barrels per day of crude as a result of this cut. To put things in perspective, that represents a little bit less of that what Canada uses or consumes on a daily basis. This is gone from the market. We have to make it up somehow. Price go up. What we're seeing is that toothless United States, and they're failing to impose their will on others. Expect more of these shenanigans moving forward. In fact, it's being reported this past week that Saudi Arabia has lowered crude prices for Europe, a noble gesture, but they're not losing out because they're raising the prices for crude when they're selling it to the United States. How fucking weak does the U.S. look after this move, considering the history of the relationship between the two countries over the last half a century? And as for the cuts in crude, these cuts come at a really bad time for the U.S. as they're heading towards an election next month, and gas prices are likely to move up, and the SPR cannot be drained fast enough to offset the rising fuel costs. And looking at the SPR more in depth, it's down 35% since the start of the year. And you'll need to go back to 1984 to see levels this low. And September had its biggest drawdown, with 7.5% of the reserve being drained in that month alone, 7.5%. And we can look briefly how we got here. Man, oh man, this is a lot that happened in just a very short period of time. Keystone XL was turfed January 2021. That, if approved, would allow more crude to flow from Alberta to refineries in the U.S. The USPR, which is used at times for emergency as well as a way to level off global market hiccups, is being drained. Why? Because there is an emergency and it's the U.S. election in 2022. As for prices of gas going up, they were blaming gas station owners as their collusion, and they're trying to make ends meet. They're trying to make fuck us over in the end. But they were also saying the same thing for crude oil, big oil companies, that they were also colluding and raising the price of crude. And you know what they're talking about? Maybe they should start reinvesting, and they're not going to reinvest now because, you know what, they don't give a fuck about us. But they're not going to reinvest because the reason is there's this political agenda out there to try to get rid of crude within the next decade or so. Why would they continually reinvest in it? But also, the last thing, and all this thing, you could look at Saudi Arabia, they're not answering telephone calls from the president. And then you have fucking, final thing, Venezuela is now shipping crude to the United States. What the fuck's gone? This is in just a year and three quarters. It's nuts what's happened in just a very short period of time. Now to my last topic, which is housing and mortgage rates. Now it's 7.12%. 8% will be a reality by mid to end of November at this pace. And I feel bad for people that who are just entering the market. But I say this, there is a silver lining out of this. As for the price of homes, if they continue to collapse, people who are fortunate enough to have money sitting around, while there could be some solid deals out there, and once, if ever, things do improve and rates should go down and home prices do go up, that means the home that you buy today, or at least over the next many, many months, could be at a discounted price. And in fact, you could potentially use that as leverage moving forward to buy more homes. But again, this is NFA. And we could even look at Manhattan real estate. And remember when Manhattan real estate was booming? It was always booming. Well, not anymore, because apartment sales have dropped 18% in the third quarter when compared to a year ago. This is the first drop in about 2 years. Less people want to get into homes in Manhattan. And all this makes sense when you look at the mortgage applications filed in the last week, and it's crashed to 2010 levels. It's so bad to look at all these numbers. And I wonder how much the Fed, or what the Fed will be doing at this point. They're going to be under constant pressure from global entities to not be so aggressive in their rate hikes. And even domestically, they're going to be feeling pressure to not cause their economy to tank, which to date has been taking a beating. And it's only a matter of time before they decide to do a 180. They could pivot on rate hikes. They could add assets to their books. And with all this, they could do it under the guise, it's best for America and its allies. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think that's going to be the end result. And that's going to be the rationale for all this. It's going to be best for America and its allies. In the end, we get fucked.
It's going to be interesting, man. There's a number of things I want to touch on, some that you mentioned and some you didn't. So let's talk first a little bit about U.S. dollar strength and what it means globally. We've talked a bit about Brett Johnson's dollar milkshake in the past, where a currency, even if it's failing, as long as it's the reserve, will show incredible strength against its counterparts in the lead up to its own destruction, as everyone floods to the strongest currency, the dirtiest cleanest dirty shirt in the pile, as they say. You're really seeing that now, and emerging markets are having a really hard time. Doomberg has a piece out called Last in Line that starts to mention this, that these markets that need LNG, that need petrochemical energy resources, they can't get them on the open market. There's a story in there about a country, I forget which country it was, but basically trying to ink longer term deals at a little below market, which presumably would still be above market at the end of that contract or for some duration of that contract, and they just can't do it. And those economies are so power hungry. They're not concerned about emissions and things like that. They have growing populations, burgeoning middle classes, burgeoning wealth growth. And without those things, you're going to put them in a difficult position. That's really a huge piece of this, because it's one thing for us to say that those emerging economies will have to wait to develop. It's another thing entirely when you think about the way those emerging economies oftentimes produce resources and materials for us here in the first world. Which is a term that I think we're going to be using more and more, and maybe not in a positive context. So I also want to talk about this tweet from Jim Bianco. It's a thread of his about Bitcoin as it relates to the Federal Reserve pivot. And he says that he thinks the era of Fed printing and pumping stocks and Bitcoin again is basically over. And he says that Bitcoin's not going to pump when stocks pump because there's no use case. And, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but I think there is a decoupling that needs to happen. We've talked about that a bit, you and I, on the show and with some of our guests, certainly with the Bear Cave guests, that, you know, this thing trades like a leveraged QQQ position. I don't necessarily agree with Jim, and I think that without seeing a pivot, we'll have to wait and find out. Now, we should also mention that the language around a pivot seems to be getting stronger and stronger. Lael Brainard today, who's a Fed governor: a shrinking Fed balance sheet will reinforce rate tightening, but it is also important to recognize that liquidity is fragile in some core markets. They're already starting to talk about ways they can get the same results that they're getting with rate hikes with other tools. And you're going to start seeing this more and more. It seems to me that the Fed chairs are, or the Fed governors, I should say, are more and more dovish with each passing day. We already talked about how the UK pivoted last week. And I think on Friday, they doubled the rate of their bond purchase program, even as the thing is set to expire this Friday. So you can tell me how you think experiment's going, that temporary special operation, as I titled the episode. You know, I don't think there's anything temporary or special about it. On top of that, Len, I look at the assets that, you know, are making returns. NYDIG had this thing out today. It was in our group chat, and I had it pinned from Twitter as well. Everything is down 3, 5, 7, 10%. But really, when you're looking at stuff that should be doing well, like most things that people view as strong compared to currencies, commodities, and equities, like real estate, that's down 13%. The REITs are down 13%. Microcaps, 11.5%. International, excluding U.S. small cap, 11%. Pacific stocks, 11%. U.S. large cap growth, you know, the Q is 9%, 10%. There's not really a lot of places to hide, which if I'm making a case that, you know, Bianco's point is wrong, I would say, well, Bitcoin, like I've mentioned before, is not the only house on the street on fire, and past performance does not indicate future behavior, of course. But I think that it's fairly likely that you're going to see Bitcoin pump if they do pivot or even just slow down the rate hikes. And to that end, I put out a tweet today that the terminal funds rate, the Fed funds rate, the neutral rate, as they like to call it, is between 4.25 and 4.75, maybe. I think I wrote 4 and 4.25. I think it's 4.25 and 4.75 now that I'm thinking about the tweet. You know, it's already almost there now. It's basically two meetings away, maybe three meetings away. And you and me have spoken on the show about how the U.S. bond market is pricing in a pivot in the first quarter of Q1 2023. You know, Len, that's about two or three meetings away. And I think about, like, you know, all this stuff where all the money is showing you where the trend is going. And I look at the dovish talk from Federal Reserve governors, and I think, well, this is all starting to look pretty good. I just want to mention here as well that since we're talking about fiscal and monetary response, Ben Bernanke in the news today as well for winning a Nobel Prize. Now, there's a lot of people who say it's unbelievable that a Fed governor won a Nobel Prize. I don't know how many people really know what Ben Bernanke is the king of. He's basically the father of quantitative easing, famous for his efforts in 08, and also famous for saying that the contagion of the housing market was, quote unquote, contained before that thing really went belly up, before the Lehman moment, as everyone likes to say. This is, you know, in the same vein that we've talked about before, the people in charge, Len, they don't know what they're doing. They just don't. Bernanke's Nobel Prize. Did you see what the nature of the research was?
No, I just know it's Nobel Prize economics. I don't know the nature of the research, though.
The nature of the research was more or less that when people run on banks, recessions and significant economic downturns get deeper and more difficult to come out of. What a shock. How come we don't have a Nobel? I feel like we've said more profound things than that on this program over the last 81 weeks. I don't know when the Nobel laureate committee, you know, community is going to come knocking on our door, but certainly we've made more important contributions than recessions are bad and get worse when there's a bank run. That to me doesn't seem like reasonable research. So all this to say that as far as the Americas go, or North America goes, it's not a pretty picture. And the inflation print is Thursday, like we said. Let's see where that comes in. I think these guys are looking for a reason to be dovish, even though there was some talk last week about obviously how the jobs numbers were good enough that we can expect more rate hikes. I think there's a midterm election coming. I think the Fed now GDP projection somehow made it to 3 or 4% for the quarter, which is completely insane. There's no way that number is not fudged. And actually, Concordonomics, I think, had a thread about how the numbers that are juicing that prediction are actually more indicative of a longer-term problem than they are a short-term sort of growth spurt. So we'll see how that plays out. But overall, I look at all this stuff, and the first thing I think is, what's changed? The only thing that's changed is the midterm elections. Everything else is either the same or worse. Stocks are lower than before. Houses are lower than before. Interest rates are higher than before. There isn't really a lot of positive data to point to. We've been wrong before on this show, but I don't know. Do you think it's fair to say that right now the biggest fulcrum for those Federal Reserve governors and the rate regime is jobs? Or do you think that it's inflation? Or do you think that there's some piece of that pie, a growing piece of the pie, I would argue, that's about the midterm elections?
Well, they've been saying all this time, they've been hanging their hats in the job. So the job numbers, and to their credit, it's, and I said it earlier in the show, it's been relatively positive. But again, just looking at it more
positive in depth, job numbers is bad economic news, though, because it means room for hikes, right? So they can say the jobs are positive. I mean, whatever state stenographer in the States is talking about, oh, the jobs numbers are great going into the midterms, blah, blah, blah. But really, pragmatically, it means that there's more room to create demand destruction via whatever vehicles and tools they have. So I don't know. What do you think? Is it fair to say, I'm super jaded when it comes to this stuff, because, you know, I think we've talked about this a bunch, and the idea that the numbers and policies aren't spun or changed based on political whims, I think, is wrong. And with the midterm election, I think it's going to become a bigger piece of the decision-making pie. Do you agree or no?
Yeah, but it's only 30 days away. So what's going to happen between, well, a little bit more, isn't it? Whatever it is, what's going to change between now and then? It's not like they have a long runway, which they could do much. We are in the situation we are, and there's not much that can be done policy-wise or anything else that can improve or even make things worse. They've been on this course for a long time with respect to raising rates and getting us to this point. But I just want to go back to the job thing. So, like, again, they could say this is a good thing, and it is somewhat reflective on the economies in terms of its productivity. But you have to really look more into it to see if it's people, again, getting second jobs,
right,
or if it's people coming back from retirement just to make ends meet. That is not indicative of a strong economy. It's like actually the exact opposite. And I want to even go back to Bernanke. Good for him for winning this Nobel Prize in economics. But after hearing the reason why he won it, we've been peer-reviewed many times, given to people that listen and watch our show. And I'm shocked. Just, you know, we should have been part of the nominated people in.
I didn't get a phone call or like you're a finalist text. Like, you know, I always pictured that when we eventually become finalists for the Nobel Prize in economics, we'll at least be able to get dressed up and be one of those like boxes on the screen, the four finalists, like at film award shows. I haven't worn a penguin suit since my wedding. Maybe I'll fire up my tux. Me and you can go to like some gala, red carpet.
I'll still wear my Kaboom Rack shirt. I don't give a fuck. I'm not going to dress up for that. And yeah, I even want to double back. What the Fed, what's their mission or their strategy moving forward? They're going to have to eventually start adding assets again to the books. It's inevitable given the environment we're in. And is it, and if ever they do that, I mean, I'm speculating at this point, if they go down this path, will it only be domestic assets, or do you think they're going to go down the path of even adding foreign assets to their book? Like,
I don't know. You saw that like in Germany, there's talk of, I wish I knew the mechanism a little better than I do. Unfortunately, I spent my whole day eating turkey. The German government is denying reports that Germany is entering into a loan agreement program to help support some of the other EU currency nations. I think that's the nature of it. Because when that report came out that they were, the German bonds again went haywire. They went bonkers. And so like I look at this when you ask about whether they're going to purchase domestic or foreign equities, I would guess is what you mean, or bonds.
A combination of the two, I'm looking.
Look, if they're concerned about market instability and normal market operations, you know, you're looking over at Europe and thinking, what's normal about that? Like that's nothing normal over there. Either they just assume that they can prevent any destruction domestically if they just keep their hat on their hook and work in America, or maybe they go abroad. Neither would surprise me. Interesting tweet I saw today. I can't remember from who. It might actually been Plate Liquor. I forget. But like, if the contagion spreads, and you know, is there, what are the odds? Like, how far down the list is like Bitcoin on the things the Federal Reserve has to prop up to prevent broader contagion, or like Kathy Wood's ARK stocks, or like, you know what I mean? Like, just the kind of weird stuff that you'd never picture the Fed buying. But I didn't picture any of this stuff either. And here we are now talking about, you know, potential pivot, like Lynn Alden said on McCormick's show today, it's Banana Republic stuff. Printing and quantitative easing into a 10% inflation environment is completely nuts. And you're seeing it for the first time. So why not some of this other stuff for the first time? Who am I to say no?
Yeah, we would not be surprised if they do go down this path. And if they do start buying up foreign assets, it's really going to test the relationships between them and other countries. Because if they start buying up assets from one country, there's going to be the question, why not this country and why not that country? Especially if they have such close ties with them and they're watching another country's economy just go to shit. Well, it's going to be an interesting time moving forward. And I don't know. It's going to be fun to watch this play out. And I don't feel happy for anybody that's going to be sitting in that position, because the people sitting there, they're doing a fucking job that is no win. Not to say that they did a good job up to this point, but there's no win situation moving forward. Like
Everyone says they're making a policy mistake, but the thing is, like, the policy mistake is not necessarily raising rates. The policy mistake was the time frame and the speed, right? Like when we had Mike Campbell on last week, the three of us agreed that the rate itself is not a problem. We've had rates this high before. The problem is we were at zero 12 months ago or whatever it was, right? 18 months ago. You know what I mean?
Not even 18 months.
It was less than 12 months, 10 months ago. You went from 0.25 to, you know, what'd you say? It's going to be 8 next month if they raise another 75 bips. So like that speed is what gets people. And the other thing that, you know, you and me have talked about, that's Canadian stories. Maybe we'll talk about it next.
You're talking about inflation. Or are you talking about the real interest rate, the nominal
rates,
interest
rates?
So yeah, it was 0.25. Now they're sitting at what? 3.25.
I don't know. It's high though, whatever it is.
It's gone up a very, like 3%-ish in 10 months time. It's considering.
Your mortgage rate is what now? You said, what was the number you gave? 7. So you're looking at 8 maybe by next month if they raise again? Like,
yeah. Buddy. If you look at also the percentage, it's not like you're going from 15 to 18, which still hurts. You're going from 0.25 to 3.25, which is a massive jump when you're looking at percentage-wise where you started.
It's a 10X. It's a 10X.
Yeah, that's bad.
Okay. Well, whatever. Well, don't worry about it. What else we got?
Well, let's move on to the global news. And wow, a lot of things going on. First, we talked about last week about Nord Stream going offline due to a supposed attack by some unknown entities. And you know what? What's interesting from this, nobody has come forward as of yet, at least to the best of my knowledge, you could prove me wrong, that and they would lay claim as to being the perpetrators for this supposed attack. And I was actually kind of waiting for ISIS to come out and say that they were responsible for it, but I think their deep water subs are in dry dock, so they can't really make claim to any of this bullshit. But now we also have an explosion knocking out a bridge that's linking up Crimea with Russia, and there seems to be, as a result of these two things, lots of poking the bear as a result, in this case specifically the Russian bear. And all the while we have United States, they also recently ordered 290 million supply of a drug meant to treat radiation sickness. I wonder what officials are thinking may happen moving forward. But as for how things are playing out globally, we have so many reasons why we Bitcoin. And I'll start off with a really interesting story from Belarus. Not sure if you saw this one. Initially, I thought this was a joke. I found multiple sources actually suggesting this is actually true. And well, here's a story. The Belarus president, Alexander Lukashenko, has banned rising prices in his country, and this started as of October 6th. And this is the out-of-the-box thinking that we need to steer us clear.
That's the most generous interpretation of events.
So I took a look after this news was announced, and I looked to see if Forex traders were looking to short their currency, and this would be the Belarus ruble. But it seems after this announcement, there hasn't been really a measurable impact in the value of the ruble. But this is given limited data that I have. I'm also now, after hearing this president from Belarus come out with this statement, I'm waiting for another president or official come out and ban CO2 from coming out of people's mouths. Because it's only a matter of time before we reach this level of clown world bullshit. But as you can see, rising prices, they're impacting everybody everywhere. And likely there's also countries, and you talked about it just a little while ago, go a little more in depth in this. There's countries that just don't have robust economies to help shield them through their citizens through inflation. And this is all because of unintended consequences through the US Federal Reserve being so aggressive with their rate hikes, but you could also throw into a mix energy policies. And some countries are feeling the pinch. Example, Bangladesh. And this past week, they have suffered a widespread blackout. And it's the first time we had something like this in almost a decade. Half the country, or about 50 million people, went into darkness as the country was struggling to import LNG. And with the limited amount of LNG floating around and European nations with the ability to outbid countries like Bangladesh, well, it's easy to see how and why this has happened. And some more clown world bullshit, Joey. This is from the BBC. It's being reported that Canadian lumber is being shipped to the United Kingdom to be burned and used as a way to create energy.
We talked about this on what that was the thing I said on Why Are We Bullish a few weeks ago, that this counts, that process you just described, biomass as it's officially called, counts as a carbon neutral process according to a lot of these ESG proponents. Completely insane. Yes. Please continue.
This setup makes up 12% of the UK's quote renewable energy end quote. And nobody's talking about the amount of energy is required to cut down the wood, prep it for transportation, send it by rail from BC, from that's where it's being originated, to the east coast of Canada, load it on a ship, sent by ship across the Atlantic, unload it into UK, and ultimately burn. And by the way, the company behind all of this, they received subsidies for what they're doing to the tune of £6 billion. Incredible stuff. This is the policy that has essentially driven Europe to where they are now. And really, Europe is at a point where they're struggling to make ends meet. They don't have the energy to keep their citizens warm. At the onset, I'm sure this idea sounded really nice. On paper, it really sounded good. But in practice, well, here we go. It just doesn't make sense. And this is more policy that's going to make our heads shake. The Dutch Prime Minister has again confirmed that Europe's largest gas reserve, and this represents the 10th largest gas reserve in the world. This is called the Groningen. I hope I spelled it right. It's a gas field.
Been a while since you did the Inner Mongolia mining update, naming these like Dutch, small jungle communities. So that's good. You haven't had that in a while.
My Dutch is awful. But anyways, they're not going to be opening up this gas field. And that's a lot of NIMBYism. And it's fucking strong in that part of the world. Let's see how this shit plays out as the winter comes into effect. The 10th largest gas reserve in the world. They're not even going to tap into this at a time where they are struggling to bring in energy to keep their citizens warm. Absolutely nuts. And you know what? We could go on. They're even going on with sanctions with Russia. They don't want to feed the Russian war machine, and especially, you know, what's going on between them and Ukraine. The EU has come out with some fresh new sanctions. They have banned all Russian Bitcoin wallets and accounts from interacting with EU service providers. This is old world applications and sanctions in a new world environment. These people are so out of touch. You can't simply ban this bullshit. They could find ways easy to get around it. They have no clue the problems in front of them. They have no clue what Bitcoin represents. They have no clue how to contain it because it can't be contained. And they're trying to apply these old world methods to do so. Every time I read stories like this, I continue to shake my head, and I understand that these guys don't have a clue. They'll never be able to put up enough legislation to stop us. Regulations, fuck that. Good luck with setting that up. They're just set with their sanctions and banning of wallets. Fuck you. You have no idea what the fuck how to deal with this bullshit. You guys are going to be fucking left to roast in the not too distant future. You're going to be freezing this winter, and all the while people are going to be spending Bitcoin with no issues whatsoever. Fuck you. You have no idea what the fuck you're doing. And this drives me absolutely bonkers when I see these type of stories.
I can tell. Interesting stuff here from Valero in California. So not quite Europe, but in the interest of putting a little cherry on top of your story about the price of energy, California obviously went after gas companies. Gavin Newsom has no idea what he's talking about, completely incompetent. And Valero responded with this great graphic of what goes into the cost of a gallon of gas. It's something like, I don't know, $4, maybe $5 out of that $8 is like taxes and fees. Mike Campbell had a guest on from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation on the weekend. I haven't listened to the full thing yet, but I did hear the woman say that in Canada, about 55 or 60 cents every liter-ish, you can count on being taxed, some places more, some places less, but...
They were talking about BC. That was
So that's a third of the price, right? Some maybe a little less depending on where you are. So when you think about the cost of energy, we're told oftentimes that the cost of energy is because of Putin's price hike, or because of the Ukraine war, or because of these price gouging corporations. The fact of the matter is the price of gas is about the same as it was before all the taxes, just that we had all these things added. So that goes for the energy that Europe is importing as well, I'm sure. I just saw a report a little while ago that there's troops heading into Belarus, Russian troops heading into Belarus. So that's another factor that's going to cause more issues. And you mentioned Nord Stream and the Crimea Bridge and all these different things. This is a lot of moving parts, man. It's almost impossible to discern and diagnose what the next thing to come for, what the next thing to come down the pipe, no pun intended, for your energy prices is. But it seems to me that it's pretty wild. I don't know if you're a Joe Rogan guy, Len, but just one other thing in the war side. he had a guy named Dave Smith on, who's a comedian, but also a big time libertarian in the States. And he made a great point. And we've talked about maybe not this exact thing, but some other stuff of this nature in the past, how governments have their media arm spin stories and use the same terminology, same language, same framing for a lot of this stuff. And he mentions that all we keep hearing is unprovoked from the media when they're describing the invasion of Ukraine. Now, I'm not saying this was a good idea or a bad idea, this invasion. Certainly it's a terrible thing for the thousands of people who have passed away, and a terrible thing for the region, a terrible thing for global stability, as I'm sure we'll talk about some more. But this idea that it's unprovoked is wrong. And I think we did provoke this. Dave makes a great point about when the USSR collapsed, the deal was basically you can't expand NATO past the German wall between East and West Germany. And every president since then, he mentions, has expanded it past there to the point now where it's on the Russian border. Now, I only mention this because much the same way that we're being told these things are unprovoked, we're also being told that energy prices are beyond the control of governments over here in the first world and in Europe. I look at those two things with the same magnifying glass and say both of those things are a lie. And it's embarrassing, I think, to be a modern citizen and not be able to pin these things down, because it's so important to your daily life. I understand if people don't get the Bitcoin thing. I understand if people don't invest in equities. I understand if people have trouble getting a home and maybe don't understand why or blame themselves for it. But I cannot for the life of me understand how more people don't spend time figuring out why their energy cost is so high and why it's not exactly this quote-unquote unprovoked price spike that we're being told. This is a result of decades and decades of poor policy. We've joked about Greta on the show a bunch, and I won't do it tonight, but that's I think, sort of like peak clown world, right? Having a student skipping school and dictating energy policy. Of course, it's not her. I'm sure there's some heavy financial backers behind that as well. Other thing I'll mention, Len, I keep on seeing that the dollar is quote-unquote strong. And when people say that, what they're looking at is the Dixie, the dollar index, and it's compared, I think, the yen, the euro, the pound, and the yuan, maybe, something like that. I forget. And it is true that the dollar is strengthening against those currencies, but what you have to ask yourself, both here, quote unquote, here in the US and abroad, is the dollar strengthening against the things that I want? And the answer almost globally is no. It's not strengthening against commodities. It's not strengthening against real estate. It's not strengthening against Bitcoin. It's not, you know, like over a 5-year period, it's not really strengthening against anything. And over a longer period, you could argue it's even worse. This is another framing mechanism that we're being told is, you know, a way to indicate that everything is fine in America. And here in Canada, as we've talked about and as we've, you know, had guests say, we're sort of a derivative of American fiscal and financial monetary policy, whatever word you want to use. All those things contribute to what we do here, and I think have a greater effect than anything our bank does. That dollar strength number is important. And I think it's putting a little bit of the wool over people's eyes at the moment and protecting them from the reality, which is all those currencies are losing power. The dollar is only gaining strength against currencies that are weakening and against other things that are truly scarce, truly limited, truly require energy, know-how, knowledge, and time to withdraw and refine and all these different things. The dollar is losing strength against those things too. The reason that there's no clear dollar commodity index on TradingView, I would guess, is because everyone knows how that would look and it would be an ugly scene. And so I'm curious about your thoughts here. What do you think, given the UK folded on their pensions and started doing the quantitative easing, given that German PPI is, you know, up near 50%, given that the Eurozone seems keen on telling the United States, yeah,
the 60% over the last.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. So given that the highest ranking EU political official, not politician, but political official today said that the Fed policy is driving a recession much deeper than we needed, given all those things, what do you think the odds are that Europe breaks from its current policy position and pivots before the Federal Reserve and tries to restore some of that euro dominance, tries to restore some of the euro USD losses, tries to restore energy markets, tries to restore stability, I would argue, before the whole experiment falls apart. Is it likely in your view? Are we talking inside of 1 month, inside of 3 months? What do you think?
It's going to be this winter if it does happen. And it's all contingent on how cold it gets over there. If it gets very, very cold, they're going to have to do something. They're going to have to get to ditch their sanctions with Russian energy. They have to find a way to get all kinds of energy in there to keep their citizens warm. And at that point, once they do that, then it's like, okay, that they just opened up the floodgates and let's try to bring back the strength to the euro. I'm not sure how they could do it, but who knows? I was wrong with my earlier number. I said 60% for the PPI for Germany. That's over the past 2 years. The past 1 year, obviously, it's much less. But I just want to reiterate that 60% over the last 2 years, the previous 40 years before that was also 60%. So that gives you an idea.
How about that? Yeah.
And the German economic machine is the one that in France, they drive Europe. And if you're going to knock one of them out, in fact, France has their own issues right now with no gas being available to them. I think there's some strike or something that's going on with refineries over there. I'm not exactly sure.
Don't forget, the German economic machine was running on the back of cheap Russian energy. And without that energy, it doesn't matter how good the BMW engineers are. You're not getting cars. It doesn't matter how good the quality of labor, how good the education is, how many top-notch people you can produce. If they can't keep the lights on for industry, you can't build. And if you can't build, your GDP is going to suffer. And you're seeing that. You are seeing that now.
Yeah. And I also want to go back. You were talking about the strength of the US dollar. I've been talking about that, and you're just reiterating my points earlier that against stuff that really matters, homes, cars, energy, fuck, even baseball cards, this thing has gone downhill over an extended period of time. Sure, you may look at 30 days or 60 days and say, oh, look, it's doing well against certain things. But no, zoom out, look at it in reality over a couple of years, 5 year, 10 year window, and you'll see that, man, oh man, it's not doing that well against actual assets. Assets that are desirable and stuff that we actually want to buy, because that is the true value of the currency. That's the best way to measure up against anything like that. And also to go back even earlier, when you're talking about the gas prices, the taxes on the gases that we pay here in Canada, I guess globally too. But specifically in Canada, it does go up. The tax that you're paying goes up based on the cost of the fuel. It's not a static number, it's percentage wise. So the government will be raking in even more money should the price of fuel goes up, because it's a percentage on the per liter that you're paying, which then becomes a huge boon for them. And it's a good cash cow. Not to say that it's something that's truly, we should be looking at it as something that's good, but it's just the reality of it. It's going to help them balance their books in the end, should they be able to balance their books. So it's going to be a new source of revenue that they could generate for the next little while, as long as the price of energy remains high.
If people can afford it, of course.
Correct. And you were talking about Russian troops moving into Belarus. I thought Belarus was on side with Russia. Are they moving?
I just saw it about 6 hours ago.
Is it a way to another attack vector to the Ukraine? Wow. And that's given what we talked about earlier today. Their president, the Belarus president, banning higher prices as the market. Yeah. Maybe that's why Russia got pissed off at them and said, "Fuck you! You can't ban inflation."
Incredible moment there. Like the president of not quite a developed economy, but it's also not on the gold machine gun index, declaring inflation banned. Like you can't raise the price of anything. What the fuck is that? What are we talking about?
I love that. That's like, awesome. Like, that's it, guys. Fuck you. We can't ban it. It's just
no more.
That's great. I'm curious to see how they can maintain this. I thought their currency would have started to tank as a result, because how the fuck could they maintain this? They're going to have to back
it. No one has any. Who's selling it? Who's holding Belarusian currency? You know what I mean? Like, it's not exactly a Forex staple, as far as I know, anyway. Shit, maybe it is.
Well, it's one of in my household, we only deal with Belarus rubles. We don't deal in Canadian dollars. It's horrible. Anyways, let's move on to the Canadian side of things. And we don't have any shirt or anything we got to deal with at this point.
There's no shirt giveaway. We're working on getting the shirts out. Me and Len were talking before the show. I think everyone who emailed us has an address and everything. We're going to try and get you the size. Sorry it took so long. We're both very busy. God bless you for your patience. And I think it was 6 shirts for the Shake Paid, 6 shirts for the Earn List. I had to go back in my tweets. So we're going to send 12 out. Len's going to send 12 out because he's got the shirts. But don't harass him if you don't get your shirt this week. He's working on it, okay?
Yeah, I got to make a trip to the post office and send it up. But it will be coming very, very soon. But moving on to the Canadian news, number one I want to talk about is Ledin, the show sponsor. And there's a couple of things I would talk about them. Number one, there's a new look that if you are a Ledin user, and we talked about it last week, well, if you use their app, the app has been updated. Oh, that's the old thing.
Is it?
Yeah.
What's the new one?
That's the old one. We have to blur that one out again.
Is it this one?
Yeah.
Is it this?
That's it. Yeah. Oh. There you go. So yeah, so there's a new look and feel. If you're using the app or their website, you actually you'll notice when you go onto this. So it's more just cosmetic than anything else, but hopefully it makes the whole process more enjoyable to use their services. But I'm just, before I go on to the next part of Ledin, do you want to comment at all about their change?
I like it. I'm all about changing looks. Our in-house graphics team has suggested we change our look a few times, and we have always taken the advice. I'm sure Ledin's graphics team is just as capable. So I like it. It's always good to update stuff, you know? Like, I always appreciate when an app on my phone comes with like a new icon. I like that. It's like it shows me you care a little bit. And the service is still the same great service, still the same great people. I like it a lot. I'm waiting for their app to add some more functionality. Once that happens, I'm going to be pumped.
Well, it may happen in the very near future, because Ledin has acquired a company called Arx Novum Investments. And this is a fully registered Canadian digital assets investment manager. And this is going to enable Ledin to offer more products, specifically yield fund products. I took a look at the Arx Novum website, and they offer four different yield funds. They have a Bitcoin yield fund, an ETH yield fund, DeFi index fund, and multi-crypto index fund. And ultimately, this is, as I mentioned, we'll be able to provide more services to their clients. If you want to ask me more about specifically about these things, I don't know. Because I tried looking it through the Arx Novum website. I couldn't get much more information besides that. But one thing to note is Ledin has been constantly trying to add more services to their system. Remember, they tried going after BlockFi and that failed. So it looks like this is maybe the consolation prize as a result of not getting BlockFi. Good, bad, I don't know. This is something that's going to be rolling out to their clients, I guess, in the not too distant future. Want to hear your thoughts about this, Joey?
Well, I don't love the ETH thing, but I understand if they want to start offering Ethereum to get people in the door, much like ShapePay. Like, I think the ShapePay index
fund or the multi.
Yeah, I mean, look, as long as it doesn't affect my risk as far as my Bitcoin holdings, I'm good with that. And you know, once they do that, if they do that, then we'll have to have Mario back on. You can talk with Spitter, Maurizio, and the guys that can come on and talk to us. They're always willing guests of the show. So I would imagine they'd have some stuff to say about that. But generally, Len, like, I am for trying to get people in the door. And I said this on Spaces on Friday, that we got to be as welcoming as possible during these bear periods, because unlike the last bear period, there's a lot more opportunity for potential Bitcoiners or pre-coiners to be co-opted by ESG and Ethereum and all this other stuff. So let's be welcoming. Let's make sure we got our ducks in a row. And if that means bringing people on to platforms that have both, ShakePay has it right now, Ledin may have it in the future, I have no idea. Let's do it, and let's educate. Let's make sure we got the best car in the garage, right? That's important.
Well, when you mentioned the word risk, the one thing that immediately comes to mind is Celsius. And the fact that they're offering products that may be Celsius-like, I hope that they're not going to be exposed to anymore. Like, we may not be, but just by virtue of putting our stuff on their platform,
I don't think they will be. Like, I can't imagine that company going from like really top tier, in my view, company. Obviously, we love them. Like, we have them as a sponsor. I can't imagine them going that direction. If they did, we know, I think we'd have to have them on. Let's talk about it. Let's see what it's all about and get their side of the story. I'm not one to jump to conclusions. I hope that you guys aren't either. Unless you're searching for common names in the Celsius dump, then immediately jump to conclusions. Yeah, anyone you know, put their name in and tweet them on Twitter.
Right away. That list is not complete, and there's a lot of inaccuracies with it. People have been saying that there's stuff that they've pushed. They put their name in there, and stuff that they do own is not listed. So take it with a grain of salt. It's a lot of fun to
own. Maybe they don't own it now. They did own it.
Well, you know, yeah, but it should be reported as that they had it. Right. So the fact that it's not even being shown, it just gives credence to the fact that it's not 100% accurate. But that's a topic for another time. I'm going to talk about the Canada Deposit Insurance Corporation, CDIC. I'm not sure if you're aware of this.
Yeah, they run commercials now during football on Sunday afternoons. It's actually the commercial is two women in a cafe, and one of them is on their laptop, and she says to her friend, "Did you know banks can sometimes go or become insolvent?" And the girl's like, "Yeah, that's why I only invest in things that have CDIC protection." She like has it up on her phone, completely organic.
I had no idea that this was even being run on NFL commercials, because I brought this up because I'm an avid YouTube watcher, and this same ad that you talked about came up on one of my videos that I watched, because I don't have the premium edition, so I'm just a pleb getting the ads. So what I'm trying to get at is the fact that they're putting these ads out there, and there's a bunch of them. Actually, you have subscribed to their channel. They have so many of these videos that were produced or at least released in the past couple of months. Makes me wonder what the hell is going on. I've never heard an ad like this anytime. And I quote one of the two women that were saying, "And in rare cases of bank failure, your deposits are safe," end quote. So it's exactly what you said. And it's reiterating the fact that you can trust depositing your money into one of these banks that have CDIC coverage. But this has never in my lifetime that I could think of has ever come into consideration when putting money anywhere. And I'm wondering now if there's more people out there that is questioning the solvency of banks. And this is a direct result of that. And the one thing that comes to mind, if this isn't late stage fiat, as our good friend, I don't want to say who, but maybe you could fill it in just in case I get it.
Our friend Massa says late stage fiat all the time. If you look up hashtag late stage fiat, you get a lot of tweets from him. That same picture of like all the gas stations, like on a otherwise beautiful hilly side of the road. I don't know whatever you call it. Anyway, a hilly Massa vista.
So if this isn't, as Massa Capital says, a late stage fiat, I don't know what is. It's an incredible event that you're having these ads not just popped up on my YouTube feed, but holy fuck, also popping up on NFL football commercials in Canada. What message are they trying to provide us?
Well, I get ads for the vaccine thing. Everyone should get another one, that action one with Teresa Tam. I get the FDIC one or CDIC one. And I also get ads for the same garbage television that no one's watching. The Good Doctor, some show called East New York, and some other show called the Fed or the Rookie Fed or something like that. It's all the same garbage every time. But that CDIC one, notable for sure.
Yeah. You know what? That now makes me wonder, because I don't really think what ads I get. I should remember them now. We could compare notes to see what we're getting.
Yeah.
I'm trying to brainwash. As you can tell, it goes in one ear and out the other when it comes to me. I'm just trying to brainwash that. Skip button as fast as possible.
Just waiting for the skip to light up. That's the best.
So anyway, on to the next topic. Kind of related to all this bullshit, but somebody noted on Twitter that in Canada, the average car payment is $741. Mm-hmm. And that $741. And the average car loan is for 72 months. If you do this math, that means it's $53,000 that the average car payment is for over the duration of the 6 years. If you want to even do the math, that's $8,800, almost $8,900 per year. Remember, this is after tax money you're spending on a car. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money people are fucking spending on automobiles. And I'm wondering how many people are living beyond their means and using this loan value or the loan duration of 72 months as a way to make ends meet. This shit makes me very concerned that people aren't putting their money in the right spot. Maybe there are a lot of very wealthy people that are doing this. But I suspect there's a lot of not so wealthy people doing the same thing.
I think you're probably right. There's a YouTube video or a Twitter video I saw. Oh man, I wish I could remember where it was. It was these guys in a car dealership. and they're talking to other people about how much they spend every month in vehicle loans. And there's not a single person there under $1,500 on cars.
Oh yeah,
I'm driving that. A brand new Charger, brand new Jeep, brand new this Camaro. Like all, first of all the worst possible muscle cars, like fake muscle cars to make you feel good at a stoplight when you're, you know, inadequate. And that's one piece. But then the other piece is like, that's a huge number, $1,500. Like if you lose your job, especially as a car salesman, you're driving a luxury good that relies on you selling more luxury goods. You don't see the weakness there? That's a little bit too much exposure for my taste. It's a bad situation, man. Those car loans, we have a friend in the group chat who had some exposure to car loans in the past. And he tells us, you know, anytime we ask him, that whole industry is just waiting to go tits up. And let's see. We're going to find out, man. We get all this stuff. I feel like we've been saying on this show for like the last 3 or 4 months especially, we are getting closer and closer to finding out what swimmers are not wearing bathing suits. Who's out there free balling? Who's out there with the boys swinging? It feels like we're getting close, but every time we get close, something else happens. We pull back a little bit. Maybe this will be the month. I don't know.
We'll see what if it is. And
Spooktober. You never know what can happen.
Well, you know, October is another landmark for businesses in Canada where they could now add extra money for surcharges when using credit cards in Canada. October 6th, in fact, is the date that they could start doing this. So retailers and other businesses will be allowed to pass on fees of up to 2.4% to consumer stores. And this really the way it works right now is if you are using a credit card, the credit card charges the vendor that money. So before it's been kind of hidden and they've been eating the cost. Well, now it's no longer the case. They now can pass it on to us. So ultimately, we could start seeing surcharges of an extra 2.4% simply by using credit cards. And it's as a result of the fees that are generated and used for using credit cards. How long can we continue to do this when Lightning Network is sitting there just doing its thing? Fees, negligible. You're talking about, you know, fractions of a penny. And in terms of settlement, instant, not like credit card where it takes days, if not longer, to have it settled. So we're seeing the Lightning Network sitting there on the sidelines saying, call me in, coach. And we're still using the same old legacy system. And we're going to get, unfortunately, nickel and dimed in the process. So yeah, expect to see a little bit more surcharges on your credit card bills, credit card purchases moving forward. And it's not looking good for us consumers.
There is a joke I am absolutely dying to make that I will make in the private chat right now. And you can tell me if you'd laugh at it or not, but I will never make it in public because it'll get us banned.
anyway, maybe you shouldn't even put it there.
it's there. So the thing I would just say is that you're getting nickel and dimed all over the place. Everywhere, Len, you're getting nickel and dimed. So like, why is this different? And you're even seeing like someone, the PayPal thing, okay? The PayPal like fake news thing or misinformation thing. Like, is that not just another revenue stream for a company whose stock is down 80%? Like, do they really care about customer service or quality of product or anything like that? They don't give a shit. They're trying to add revenue. And the way to add revenue is to do stuff like this, nickel and dime or misinformation fees or whatever. It's only going to get worse because people are going to start waking up to the fact that one, there's a lot more competition in the market as far as ways to spend money and earn money and save money. And two, Len, people are not buying as much stuff. Like they're just not. And I think people now are realizing that, hey, maybe this is not going to be all over in a month or 2 months. And I got to start getting my ducks in a row. But I don't know. What do you think? Do you think this is a surprise? This is not a surprise.
No, it certainly isn't a surprise. And any chance they have to tack on extra charges and they could collect, they'll do so. And I can understand that motive. It's just, unfortunately, what doesn't jive with me, is the fact that they are doing this when there's an alternate system that works. And it's not going to be something that will truly hinder the user experience. You tap your phone or whatever, the QR code, and away you go.
Yeah.
And settlement is instant. It's not the case with credit cards. You go to a restaurant, you pay with your credit card. The restaurant is not going to see that money, even though you paid for it today, for some time. It's got to be settled behind closed doors. And I'm not privy to everything because I'm not, you know, I'm in the know for this. But from what I understand, it takes days, if not longer, for that money to come back to the restaurant. Well, Lightning, you don't have that. So you're getting instant settlement, cheaper fees all around for transactions. Fuck, like, it's time we advance from these old, tired legacy systems that just work to pander the people that are trying to push it on us. And we should replace it with something that is better. Not saying that the Lightning is ready for that for prime time right now, but it's fucking close. And once it does get rolled out, it's going to be better for all of us in the end. The consumers are going to benefit from that.
I think you're right, my brother. Passionate appeal there. Very passionate appeal. What else? What else we got? What time is it? We're an hour and 5 minutes in. How much juice you got in the tank, if we're really being honest? Do you have a lot of juice in the tank?
A little bit more, yeah.
Okay, let's do it. All right.
We'll five new stories.
Okay.
Let's talk about Tiff Macklem, and he's the Bank of Canada governor. And he said that more interest rates increases are necessary to tame inflation. And so they're basically going to be raising rates for the next little while, doing whatever it takes. And there's going to be no chance for a pivot if you listen to what he's saying. So you're going to see a lot more 50 and 75 basis point increases moving forward. But we also have word from the chief economist from BMO. His name is Doug Porter. And he said some in Canada are now openly questioning the ferocity of the Bank of Canada's tightening campaign. The cold hard fact is the policy errors were made last year with overly easy conditions globally, and there is simply no pain-free path out. Great. He's 100% right. This is a knee-jerk reaction. They created the mess and they're trying to fix it, and it's going to be on our backs. The economy is suffering. Everything is going up with respect to interest rates and all that garbage. The credit markets are drying up as a result. This is going to have a massive impact moving forward because it's hard to adjust from a very cheap credit system to a not so cheap credit system. Businesses are going to have to adjust. It takes time to do so. Individuals are going to have to adjust. It's going to take some time to do so. And fuck, even governments is going to take some time to adjust. We famously had our finance minister 2 Decembers ago, I think it was, or one, I think it was two, so two, December 2020.
Freeland? Yes, yeah.
She was saying that getting into debt at that time made sense because it was cheap to borrow. Well, it's not. As cheap now to borrow. It's still, I guess, comparatively to the 1980s, early 80s, it was cheap. But from where we are now to where she said that statement, it's now more costly to borrow. So everything with respect to borrowing is getting more costly. And if they're going to raise rates and just continually doing aggressive rate hikes, they're doing this on our back. And it's unfortunate. This is just all reactionary, and they're not being proactive in their approach.
By their nature and because of the tools they have at their disposal, they have to be reactionary. They're always looking at backwards facing data, which is a problem if you're trying to fix things that are on a go forward basis. It's impossible to predict the sort of events that you see happening now. You know, it feels like that whole decades in a week thing is, you know, becoming more and more true by the day. It's impossible to predict these things. Tiff, you know, I also happen to think that he is not quite as interested in the spotlight as Powell is. And so, again, like I've said before, I don't think he wants to be talking about this stuff and have his name in lights every week. But because of the speed we share information now and all the available places where people can talk to each other about this stuff, social media, Facebook, you know, whatever, he has no choice. And as far as Canadians questioning the veracity of the rate regime, the hike program. Yeah. Why wouldn't they be, Len? People are feeling the pinch, man. Like you and me joke about how skip the dishes and some other stuff now is like buy now, pay later for a piece of pizza. Pizza had the rate lock in thing. Remember that? Doesn't that feel like it was a year ago? It was like last month. These guys started doing that. These are things that we never thought would happen. And here we are now. And so of course Canadians are going to be questioning it. Now the real test of whether or not Macklem and the BOC have any metal is if the US pivots. If they pivot, can we keep raising? I don't think so. What do you think?
It's two schools of thought. Greg Foss always says that we're the test bed for what happens with the Fed. So yeah. if that's the case, then we're going to pivot first. But I mean, everything you hear is that we're going to be going in lockstep with the US. So it's when the US goes down, reduces their rate hikes, we're probably going to do the same at the same time. So I don't think we're going to just do something without their prior knowledge. And there's going to be some backroom talks and say, look, we're going to do this. Oh, we're going to follow your footsteps too. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be, if one does it, the other one's going to do it as well, but it's going to be, you know, very, very close by a couple of weeks difference in terms of when they do any changes moving forward. So I don't think Canada is just going to continually raise rates if US starts to reduce the amount of rates that they do, like a rate hike.
I agree. That's exactly what I feel.
And moving on, Canada has added another 21,000 jobs in the month of September. And with this, unemployment has fallen to 5.2%. In the previous month, unemployment was sitting at 5.4%. So we've gone down slightly as a result. And this is all a shell game. We talked about this in the past, how many people are still actually actively looking for employment. So I think this is one that it's easily spun into a W, but the reality is the more and more you dig into this, there's a lot of shenanigans going on here, and there's a lot of manipulation of the numbers to make things look like they are rosy. Ask yourself, do you think that the unemployment rate is really low? I see so many fucking help wanted job wanted signs out there. Nobody's filling them. And people out there, they just, you know, I don't know what the fuck's going on. Like, are people working 2-3 jobs? I don't know. It doesn't seem like the way I think and the way I feel, it's a healthy economy. So this 21,000 job number they're posing and the unemployment rates falling to 5.2%, it's just it's fluff more than anything else.
As per reports, the sudden uptick happened not because new jobs were created, but because over 20,000 people left the labor force last month. In fact, in the past 3 months, the economy has lost 104,000 jobs in total. Even after the massive hiring in September, fewer people are working today than were working in May.
There you go. It's a lot of manipulation. And then without that knowledge, and if you just on the surface, like say that number, that these jobs were created. Yeah, it's a W. Let's do it. We're doing great for the economy. But the reality is once you scratch the surface and see what's behind it, it's just fool's gold and there's nothing there. There's no substance, unfortunately.
That's right. One thing I've been turned on to is that education hires many, many, many part-time people who don't get the 10 over 12 thing or 12 over 10, whatever you call it, the summer's off. And so in August, September, you get a kind of a big jump there, where people return to work from being unemployed, quote unquote unemployed, while they wait for the educational season to resume. So that's another thing to keep in mind when you're looking at these September numbers. I would have to go back and look and see if there's a bump for that sector in years past. But, you know, you said it, we've said it many times, shell game, man. You tell me if you think the economy is strong and you think all this stuff is going, you know, swimmingly. I would tell you it is not. We see very clearly by Fed and BOC policy, it is not, apparently. So these numbers where everything is rosy, you know, one of these things has to be false. And it seems to me as long as the rate keeps going up, the rates keep going up, then that's your answer right there.
Last Canadian story I have, and Yochi Gamma was asking us on Twitter to talk about it, and he was listening to Mike Campbell's podcast from October 1st, and on that podcast, he was talking about, or at least he and a guest were talking about, the Canadian government has an outstanding $600 billion that is unaccounted for the previous fiscal year, and there was a deadline in which they had to report this, and that deadline has passed, and they have not debated it or talked about it or submitted these numbers. And unfortunately, like typically in the past, this is all part and parcel of standard procedure for governments of previous year to do so. So the fact that now we're having this $600 billion that is unaccounted for makes us wonder what's going on over there. Not to say that there's going to be a lot of shadiness or something going on, but until we get the numbers in front of us and we could examine it and it's being debated in the House and by the committees and subcommittees, it's just like we could just take their word at face value, but without any way to scrutinize it, it's, man, oh man, it's tough to really look at this with a positive light.
There's, to me, an issue with optics here, but not the way that you might think. A lot of Canadians are really tightening their belts and looking for every penny they can find when it comes to saving, spending, all that stuff. I expect the same as our government. You know, I expect the same from our government. And I'm really kind of worried that we're not getting that kind of responsibility from them, it seems. Like you said, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's, you know, theft or something of this nature, but certainly we got to keep those books up to date. It's not a number I've really kept track of. I don't know. How often do you look at this kind of thing? Like, is this a yearly phenomenon? Is it a, you know, once every 4 years? Is it a, you know, COVID only? What's the deal on this?
The way I understand it, it shouldn't come up on a radar at all, just because this is standard procedure and they should be doing it. The fact that it hasn't been done, then it kind of raises this on our radar and say, hey, what's going on here? Maybe there's just so much information that they have to gather and accumulate this in their report. But if that's the case, man, that makes me wonder, wow, how, did they truly account for everything? And is it all done properly? I don't know. It's just, it's a lot of money. $600 billion in the United States is a drop in a bucket. In Canada, it represents a massive amount, considering how small our country is in comparison. Our GDP is much smaller than the United States as well. So, yeah,
oh, it looks you like we 18 just hit the first number of your Bitcoin price there. That's how you look
at it. We dropped under $1,000. It's a good buying opportunity, NFA. Not going to say you should, but you know, it's looking like it's a good time to do it. All right.
Yeah, great time to stack.
Anyway, let's move on to the rest of the news. Number one, Grayscale. We know them. We talked about them at length before. They launched, get this, Joey, a Bitcoin mining investment vehicle, and that pays out mined Bitcoin as dividend. And Grayscale Investments, which we all know what they are, they announced the creation of a new entity called Grayscale Digital Infrastructure Opportunities LLC, and it's going to focus on Bitcoin mining infrastructure investments. And the venture will assist accredited investors to capitalize on the crypto market turndown. In particular, the co-investment vehicle will buy Bitcoin mining equipment at distressed prices, with which it will then expand its own mining operations. This is the bear market type of opportunities you like to see. Grayscale deploying capital at a time where capital can be easily deployed if you do have it, spend also when prices are low with respect to the equipment. Really cool stuff. I want to see how this thing plays out over time.
What's the NAV discount on the Grayscale GBTC ETF right now?
I have no idea, but it's very, very high. And Greg Foss was hypothesizing some time ago, it's just a matter of time before somebody that has a lot of capital just scoops the whole fucking thing up, because it's at a discount, and you're going to then, they could potentially then turn it private, get all the Bitcoin.
That's a big if. That's right.
He's just hypothesizing. But if you look at it, the opportunity is there. It's at a discount. And why not, if you do have a lot of capital you need, but the idea that there's some merit to that, I'm not saying it's going to play out. I'm just saying that's a possibility. And if it does, wow, it'd be cool if that happens. So, but it is right now trading at a very deep discount, from what I understand.
Yeah, I kind of like this new vehicle. I'm curious, though, as to what GBTC is doing behind the scenes about that product. Because I that was a lot of, I don't want to say campaigning, but certainly there was an effort to put that in front of a lot of people in the public sphere maybe a year ago. And I totally forgot about that until just now. It completely vanished off my radar. So what are they doing with that? That's a lot of people who are hoping the same thing you are, or at the very least that it becomes the spot ETF, which I think I said was going to happen a while back.
Well, you said they would be the first. In the running, it could still happen.
That net asset value discount tells me that no one in the know views this as a possibility, at least in the short term, medium term, even maybe. That's not good.
I didn't think of it.
This is why you buy spot and just put it in cold storage. Like, you don't play games in a system that relies on this thing hitting as many points of friction along the way as humanly possible. As far as like buying GBTC, just buy spot. If you're going to buy Bitcoin, that's the way to get exposure. Don't toy around with this other stuff. You never know.
It's just, remember the avenues in which you could buy it in, like the 401ks, or I forget what else they have in the United States.
There's some tax efficiencies. I know. Yeah. The Roth IRAs and the IRAs in the States.
So I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying one can make an argument and you can understand where they're coming from, that buying it that way versus the spot is an efficient way of deploying your money. So it's hard to argue against that. I mean, everything is just an individual scenario, and it's different in every case. But moving on, I've got a couple of more stories. Number one, FTX and Visa, they have together banded to launch a crypto debit card worldwide, and they're rolling out the Visa debit card linked to FTX accounts. And this is in 40 countries, starting in Latin America. And it's going to allow crypto holders to use their digital assets to pay for goods and services from their FTX wallets. And they also plan to be offering the same thing in Europe by the end of this year. And this is going to be a debit card, and it will come with zero administration fees and processing fees. And that's really cool. So it's a good way to spend your Bitcoin should you have it in FTX, and you could use that to buy goods and services. Now in 40 countries, starting in Latin America and soon to be in Europe.
What does the ShakePay cost, the fee associated with spending on your card if you don't have enough CAD and you have to dip into Bitcoin, which they will do, by the way? So what is the fee? Do you know?
I have no clue.
I wonder what it is, and I wonder if they're working on getting that down. We should have asked Carlo that when he was here a couple of weeks ago, but it wasn't on my mind. The earn program was on my mind. I'm looking for something like this, honestly.
Is that going to happen, though? Is that the way it's
going to
work?
I don't know. I like this idea. Do you like this idea? Like spending, being able to spend kind of your Bitcoin on stuff, you know, spend and replace. If it's free, you don't have to pay any big fees. Presumably they batch the transactions, the big exchanges. I'm indifferent too, but I like it more than they don't like it. I personally maybe wouldn't use it as often as someone else, but we have Ledin as a sponsor, for example. You get into a liquidity crunch, you want to take a loan against your Bitcoin. Maybe you're not interested in the loan. You don't want to deal with the interest and stuff. You just want to spend it, not have to worry about sending it off a hardware wallet or whatever, or buying a gift card. This is not a bad way to do it, right? It's kind of another opportunity to make this thing into a transactional currency, which at the moment, I think we agree it's getting there, but it's not quite there yet. Not ready from prime time, as we like to say.
I'm with you on that, but I'm very much indifferent to this whole thing. I just thought it was noteworthy to just discuss it in the show. The last thing I want to talk about, and you touched upon it briefly, and if you want to go more in depth, we can at this point, is PayPal. They initially introduced a new policy where they could deduct $2,500 from your account per incident, and they've since did a 180, and they're no longer going to be doing that. So at the time when this came out, it created a whole bunch of uproar, and people closed and canceled their PayPal accounts. And keep in mind, Venmo is also a subsidiary of PayPal, if I recall correctly. So that's another one. If you're using them and you don't like what PayPal did here, you may want to close your Venmo account and try to find alternatives. And somebody did some research. I think that they found that the PayPal CEO is also a member of, somehow associated with, the World Economic Forum. So
that cannot be true. If that is true, I will eat a whole piece of Cadbury milk chocolate on this podcast next week, if that's true.
So that's basically it. So it is, you know, I don't know what else to say. It was kind of a fucked up story when it came out. I'm not saying that it was people closing their accounts is the right thing to do, but this is such a fiat thing to as a way to, like, if they don't like what you're doing, to fine people up to $2,500. That's a significant fee, and that's per incident. And man, I don't know, like, such a fiat way of approaching this, and I'm not happy with what they did here.
The people who cry the loudest about misinformation are the ones who are the most incompetent journalists, the most incompetent purveyors of information, the most incompetent of convincing others that their point is correct. And PayPal, like I mentioned before, is a dying company. PayPal Mafia all went on to bigger and better things and really did sell the top, as they say. It's like pretty clear, right? There's a great graphic of the PayPal Mafia and all the things they've done, right? Sachs and Elon, obviously the big ones, but the number of people who have left PayPal in favor of other services in the last little while is huge. They're being undercut by Apple. Venmo, you'll remember, Len, or maybe you don't remember, Venmo for a while was under some fire because you could see the running transaction tab of the entire network. And so people would send each other money and they'd put, like, pictures of pills in the thing or guns or whatever, right? And, like, I've been to music festivals. I've seen people pay for drugs with Venmo a million times. I've seen that. They just Venmo each other money. A couple of Americans get together and Venmo each other money for drugs. And, like, Venmo was publishing all that stuff. And this is par for the course with them. Why would you ever want to participate in something like this? And someone else raised a good point that, you know, oh, this is illegal, likely, you know, it would never hold up in court. That's not the problem. The problem is Venmo has access to your bank account. And so it's going to be up to you to do the suing and all the court work. They're going to have the money. And, you know, there's a lot of people who probably won't be interested in pursuing those things. They'll just pay the money and move on. Boomer in the chat is adding another name to that. So Sachs, Elon, and Peter Thiel, also a PayPal mafia guy. Star-studded lineup, man. It's really too bad. That company had a lot of promise, obviously, with the eBay integration, but completely fallen off.
The president and chief executive officer, his name is Dan Schulman. Not the Dan Schulman that's associated with, I think, baseball. To the quick search, yeah, he is affiliated with the WEF. It says here on the WEF website, Dan is actively involved in the World Economic Forum as a member of the International Business Council and the Board of Governors and Board of Stewards for the Future of Finance and Monetary Systems platform. So he does have a connection with them. Not trying to put the tinfoil hat on, but this is straight from their website. And draw your own conclusion here.
What a seems gong like- show. Absolute gong show.
Yeah, and that's it for the show. We could transition to the last part of our show. You can get the graphic ready if you want, and it's the Bitcoiner and No Coiner of the week, and brought to you by Tahini's. There you go. You can run with this one, Joey.
Joke. We'll always bull market Tahini's, etc., etc. Go there and buy some food. Len, I don't have a No Coiner, and I barely have a Bitcoiner, but I will say, my Bitcoiners of the week are these guys, okay? These fellas here. Yeah. I was playing around with this thing for CoinKite. The guy's at CoinKite. I was playing around with this thing for an hour today, watching videos, trying to figure out how to mix coins, setting up hot wallets. And like, I very rarely get so excited about a piece of hardware because I have been buying gadgets forever. And I continue to be impressed by this thing. So impressed, in fact, that I took my laptop and the cord and a cold card to my Thanksgiving dinner to show my uncle, who is also a big tech guy and a Bitcoiner. And he had never seen it before. And I said, this thing, trust me, this thing is something. If you're going to go to a store and buy stuff for the end of civilization, okay, this thing would make it into your pouch if you were a Bitcoiner. Wouldn't be your ledger, wouldn't be your treasure. It would be this thing. Believe me, it would be this thing. I continue to be impressed by the guys at CoinKite. I have barely even scratched the surface of this, and I'm so hyped. Sparrow's great. The integration's great. So kudos to those guys and girls at CoinKite, my Bitcoiners of the week this week.
And it's made in Canada.
That's right.
Another good thing behind that as well. So yeah, the cold card is definitely, it's a great product, and the people behind it, yeah, great Bitcoiners of the week. And I don't have a No Coiner, but I have a Bitcoiner. I actually want to thank Boomer for providing this one. He gave it to me, at least a suggestion, so late in the game, and I'm going to take it. And it's going to be Greg Foss for my Bitcoiner of the week. The gentleman has been on numerous shows. His name has been thrown around quite a bit in the past few months, but this past week, you can see him on a number of different podcasts, and he's bringing the heat everywhere he goes. A lot of, as Boomer says, dropping truth bombs, and he's taking no prisoners. And yeah, it's definitely, if you want to learn a little bit about math, not from Ricky's grade 10 math, but actually some real math here. It's a good way to check it out. Listen or watch Greg Foss talk. He always just brings the heat, and he's my Bitcoiner of the week.
Great pick. I like Greg. We got to get him back on. He was a good guest when we had him. Unfortunately, we had to do a little editing of that show, but you know, these are the things you deal with when you're running a podcast. So anyway, that's the it. I mean, these things happen, right? Let's do the after show here. The price of Bitcoin, as I pull up TradingView, $19,026.58.
And in Canadian dollars, you got me. Shoot, I can get it ready. Thanks. Let's see what we got in Canadian dollars. And it's 26,149. Somebody's saying that just before we close off, it's not grade 10, but grade 11. Yeah, you're right. That's what Greg Foss talks, grade 11 math. But Ricky did pass his grade 10. Ricky's now in grade, what is he now?
I think he's passed his, did he pass his grade 10? So I guess that means he's in grade 11, right?
I think he's even past that.
The grade 10 Letterman jacket on one of the episodes. Like, hey, that show's so good.
He eventually passed his grade 10 and grade 11, but he failed grade 12. So he's stuck in grade 12. So yeah, grade 10 is now passed. So he's now in grade 12, and that's beyond the grade 11 math. So there you go.
God bless everybody. We'll see you soon. Don't forget to check out the interview with Mike Campbell last week. We may or may not have an interview this week. I'm debating what to do. We're both very busy. And if not, then we'll either do a nooner or wait till next week when we have another interview scheduled with Ron Butler, I believe, Len, who's going to be a great guest. He's a mortgage guy from the West Coast. Highly recommend following him on Twitter, Ron the Mortgage Guy. And until then, take care of yourselves.
Yeah, take care.